You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. We have 3 weeks now, officially. I mentioned this yesterday, but we have a three-week comment period. As far as I can tell, the current chairman of the FCC and probably all the other members of the FCC are very much looking forward to when they retire and they can get $3 or $4 million a year jobs working for Comcast, because now they're saying, if you want to go to the Tom Hartman website or the Daily Kos website or, you know, frankly, the Drudge website, I mean, pick your website. It may load a little slow unless they pay a fee to us. It's the end of net neutrality. It's obscene. It's wrong. And it's something the president should be able to do something about. He doesn't have the direct authority, but he can certainly call up his head of the FCC, Tom Wheeler, and say, Mr. Wheeler, you will either change your policy or you will be replaced tomorrow morning. And so I would suggest that, I mean, you know, calling the FCC and raising hell about it is a fine thing, and we'll share details with you as the day goes on about how to do that. But calling the White House comment line and saying, President Obama, it's time to end the revolving door. If these guys, it's like the last head of the FCC, Colin Powell's son, then went off to become the head of the lobbying group for the internet companies, right? I mean, this is how it works. Okay, number one, we got a bunch of stuff to talk about today. Number two, Cliven Bundy. He's wondering out loud, were black people, to use his phrase, the Negroes, better off under slavery, better off as slaves than under government subsidy? No, I'm not making this up. And no, to the best of my knowledge, well, I can't say what Sean Hannity's saying. He's on the air the same time I am. He may well be saying, oops, I got trolled. This guy didn't pay his taxes. He said he bought the ranch in 1877. He bought it in 1948. He bought water rights only to the land. He's been, you know, squatting on federal land for years and refusing to pay. The guy's a freeloader. He's worse than Ronald Reagan's welfare queens. Is Hannity going to say I've been punked? Anyhow, here's what Cliven Bundy had to say.
The Negro. I want to tell you one more thing I know about the Negro. When I go through Las Vegas, North Las Vegas, and I would see these little government houses, and in front of that government house, the door was usually open, and the older people and the kids, and there's always at least a half a dozen people sitting on the porch. They didn't have nothing to do. They didn't have nothing for their kids to do. They didn't have nothing for their young girls to do. And because they were basically on government subsidy, and so now what do? They abort their young children. They put their young men in jail because they never learned how to pick cotton. And I've often wondered, are they better off as slaves picking cotton, having family life and doing things, or are they better off under government subsidy?
They just transferred.
Yeah, they didn't get no more freedom. They got less freedom. They had less family alive, and their happiness, you can see in their faces, they weren't happy sitting on that concrete sidewalk. Down there, they were probably growing their turnips. So that's all government. That's not freedom.
Yeah. So, you know, first of all, this betrays a shocking level of ignorance about what slavery was. As a slave, a man and woman couldn't even get married. Their children were the property of the slave owner. Children were not just frequently, but almost always sold away from their parents. Husbands and wives, or men and women, were split. There was no family life under slavery. So it's like, you know, another clueless white guy. But what I find really interesting about this is, you know, everybody's gung-ho behind this guy until he mentions, as he said, I want to tell you about the Negroes. As soon as he mentions race, and then everybody runs in the other direction, at least all of the conservative politicians. But, you know, the Republican senator from Nevada has now denounced him. So I wanted to ask Matthew Heimbach his thoughts on this. Matthew's been on our program before. He's a member of the Maryland League of the South and the Sons of Confederate Veterans. He founded the White Student Union, WSU, when he was a student at Towson University. And his Twitter is @MatthewHeimbach, H-E-I-M-B-A-C-H. Matthew, welcome back to the program.
It's a pleasure to be here, Tom. How are you doing today?
I'm fine. I'm curious your thoughts, A, on what Mr. Bundy said, and B, on how Republican politicians are responding to it.
Well, I mean, first and foremost, in regards to slavery, I mean, slavery was an inhumane situation for both the black population and the middle and lower class white population, where it artificially depressed wages to keep whites poor, and of course it was stripping away the freedom of black folks who shouldn't have even been here in the first place. That this is an example of where capitalism destroys not only the families of non-whites, but of everyone that was involved. But the biggest problem I see here, kind of like you mentioned, is this is the same, as you just used the word revolving door in the last story, the revolving door of when the GOP establishment tries to stand up for the GOP base. The New York Times had an article that just came out about how 90% of Southern whites vote Republican. Now, this is the biggest thing, and I agree actually with the liberal media, who identifies the fundamental fact that Mr. Bundy's comments, while not historically accurate, do represent, I think, a large base of especially the Tea Party movement. Now, where you and I would disagree is that the base of the GOP being racially conscious, I would say that's a good thing, and you would say it's a bad thing. But I think we both are kind of seeing the same thing that as happened at Ruby Ridge, where Randy Weaver was a white separatist. I have no problem with him being a white separatist, and I think that's a fine ideology. But where the Republicans come to bat for one of their own, quote unquote, and as soon as they find out that they're actually think the way that most of their base does, they throw them under the bus.
In other words, as long as Randy Weaver was just simply being charged with selling a sawed-off shotgun to a federal agent, and the ATF was coming after him, he had the whole Republican establishment and all the conservatives on his side. As soon as he opened his mouth and started talking about separating the races, all of a sudden everybody just fled. Is that your point?
Well, exactly, and this is what happens all the time. I mean, I know for myself that when I was doing conservative activism and my views, the language I used really didn't change that much. But when I first started college, I was getting invited to speak at all these different Republican events in the entire D.C. metro Baltimore area, and it was great. But the thing is most of the people think the way we do, but when the establishment bosses who live in D.C. and have no connection to people who actually vote for them, when something politically incorrect happens, the Republicans flee. And that's why you look at why Mitt Romney, if he'd gotten the same amount of votes as John McCain did, he would have won the election. But white voters especially are feeling abandoned by the GOP on social issues, issues like immigration, and issues of race. So we're just not voting for the Republicans anymore. And still, even within that, 90% of Southern whites are voting Republican. So I just see this as the exact same thing that always happens. The GOP establishment tries to out-left the left, and it alienates their base. It doesn't win them any friends, and they turn on their own constituents.
Well, and Lee Atwater made this comment. In fact, we played a clip of it. I'm going to have to dig it out. You have it? Yeah, if you can find it. We'll have to do it after the break. But basically, he said, and this was back in when he was working on the Reagan campaign. He said, 20 years ago, we used to use, and he used the N-word, and we'd say N-word, N-word, N-word. He said, and then we discovered that you couldn't do that anymore, so we started talking about desegregation and things like that, which was code for that. He says, now all we got to do is say tax cuts. Everybody knows what we're talking about.
And so, I think that's 100% accurate, where the white voters are given a dog whistle to be able to see who they're,
Right, but as soon as the dog whistler speaks the truth out loud, word for word, they're in trouble. Matthew, thank you for dropping by and sharing your perspective with us.
Thank you, Tom. Have a good day.
You too.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
That's Matthew Heimbach. He is the founder of the White Student Union over at Towson University and willing to speak his truth. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And Nate Sweet is on the line with us, international television superstar. Hey, Nate, how you doing?
Doing well, Tom. How about you?
I am just fine. Thank you very much. That's a nice shot. What is that over your shoulder?
Oh, I think that's a shot of Dukakis, the Dukakis poster.
No, it's something. It's Oh, it's Scott Walker. It's the Scott.
Oh,
yeah. It's our Scott Walker poster.
The human event thing we have in here in the studio.
Yeah. We have the strangest stuff. Anyhow, so tonight on our Tevelvision show, it being Thursday, we are going to start off with Mr.
Papantonio.
Papantonio, thank you.
Yeah, Mike, America's lawyer, is going to be joining us. He'll be breaking down some of the news of the day. We'll be starting off by talking about, I think, the news that everybody knows about by now, Clive and Bundy's comments about slavery. And sort of we'll be breaking those down with Pap to see how many Republicans are really going to disassociate with themselves with those comments, if they can disassociate themselves with those from those comments, and just, you know, sort of digging into how much different what he said.
Did you hear what Matthew just had to say?
I heard the end of it. It was interesting.
It's fascinating because, I mean, here's a kid who's openly a white separatist. He founded the White Student Union. And I've been saying this for a long, long time that, and you know, Lee Atwater was saying it back in the 80s, that, you know, you want to appeal to the white Southern racist vote, and he said it's probably about 90% of them. You know, you've got to figure out a way to speak about race. And it used to be that you used the N-word, and now you've got Clive and Bundy using the word Negro, which is, you know, close. But Lee Atwater said, you know, we've reached the point in the 1980s, 1990s, where you don't even have to use either of those words. All you have to do is talk about tax cuts or taxes or welfare, and everybody knows exactly what you're talking about. It's racial dog whistle
stuff. Well, I think what's interesting is, you know, there's obviously a difference in degree in terms of what Bundy said and, for example, what Paul Ryan said a few weeks ago when he was talking about the culture of poverty in the inner city.
I don't think there's a difference in degree at all. I think there's a difference in sophistication.
Right. The language that's what I meant to say. The language that they use, the way it's presented. But I think there's, you know, those thought currents exist within the mainstream of the Republican Party. They're just polished a little bit.
In fact, if for tonight you could find that Paul Ryan sot, if it exists as a sot.
Yeah, I believe we have that saved.
Yeah, if you could find that Paul Ryan sot and take this little piece of that Clive and Bundy sot and put it back to back and ask Pap what's the difference, I think I have a feeling he'd love to go off on that.
Yeah, I think that's a great way to really talk about some of those issues.
Yeah, sot, for those of, we're talking TV talk. I'm sorry, it stands for sound on tape. It basically means clip. I should have said clip.
Yeah.
So anyhow, we've got Pap on to begin with, and then we're going to get into our screwed segment with Stephen Spaulding, who's with Common Cause.
And we also got Craig Holman from Public Citizens Congress Watch. We'll be talking about the FCC's decision to pretty much destroy net neutrality. It was already killed by the DC Circuit Court. The FCC put the nail.
Well, it wasn't drilled. It wasn't killed. It was put on pause because the court explicitly said that if the FCC decides that these guys, you know, Comcast is a common carrier, then there's instant net neutrality. Period. End of discussion. All you got to do is say two magic words: common carrier. I think President Obama should call up Tom Wheeler and say, "You get with the program, or you're fired." I mean, it should just be that damn simple. Anyhow, Nate Sweep.
I mean, it'd be hard to see because they're on the side of the broadcasters pretty much every issue.
Oh, they're on the side of the money. Yeah. That's what's going on. We don't have a democracy in this country anymore. We've got an oligarchy, and it's time for us to start rising up and doing something about it, even if that just means calling the president up. Thank you, Nate. So here it is. I'll read it to you first, and then we'll play Lee Atwater saying it, because, you know, it's not the world's best recording, but if you hear me read it to you first, you can get what he's saying. And keep in mind, this was during the Reagan campaign. This was one of Reagan's chief advisors. This was the guy, you know, Lee Atwater. He's the one who came up with the idea of working the refs. He's the one who helped start, I think it's AIM, wasn't it? Accuracy in Media. The guy with the red hair, I constantly forget his name. He used to go after me all the time. But anyhow, they started every time the CBS Evening News would say anything that reflected poorly on Republicans. They go, oh, liberal bias, look at it. Until what's his name? Yeah, Accuracy in Media and whatever his name is. Anyway, and Kincaid, yeah. So anyway, I mean, it's like, you know, these. So here's Lee Atwater he says, you start in 1954 by saying, and he uses the N-word. He says, N-word, N-word, N-word. By 1968, you can't say N-word. That hurts you. It backfires. So you say stuff like forced busing, states' rights, and all that stuff. And you get so abstract. Now, you talk about cutting taxes and these things you're talking about are totally economic things, and a byproduct of them is blacks get hurt worse than whites. And subconsciously, maybe that's part of it. I'm not saying that, but I'm saying that if it is getting that abstract and that coded, we are doing away with the racial problem one way or another. You get this? In other words, the Republicans are no longer having to use words of race to evoke racist reactions. He says, obviously, sitting around saying we want to cut taxes and we want this is a lot more abstract than even the busing thing, and a hell of a lot more abstract than N-word, N-word. So any way you look at it, race is coming on the back burner. Now, here he is in his own words.
You start out in 1954 by saying, by 1968, you can't say that, that hurts your backfire, so you say stuff like forced busing, states' rights, and all that stuff. And you get it so abstract now, you're talking about cutting taxes, and all of these things you're talking about are totally economic things, and the byproduct of them is blacks get hurt worse than whites.
You can just stop right there. So you get the point. He's saying, you know, when you talk about cutting taxes for rich people and quote, tax reform, blacks get hurt worse than whites. Everybody knows it. So you don't have to talk even about forced busing anymore. So anyhow, he continues on, but the recording's bad enough. I don't want to inflict it on you. But I find this fascinating. Can you get arrested for having a Twitter parody account? Police just busted this kid into this kid's door, took his computers. I'll tell you about that a little later on in the program. Ed in Los Angeles. Ed, you wanted to comment on the Bundy Ranch thing?
Yeah, hi, Tom. It's been a few years now, but I used to be one of your regular callers when we were both up in Oregon.
Oh, great.
But, anyway, I think we're all getting lunched on this thing every time we use the right-wing language of government agents or federal agents or BLM agents. They're law enforcement officers, and, they were
performing
their duty within their primary jurisdiction.
You're right. And they had outlaws pointing guns at them.
That's exactly right. They were domestic terrorists and racist armed insurrectionists. And, that's the language we should be using to describe the Bundy people, because that's what they are. The thing is, language is a living thing. Words and phrases, they gain new meanings and shed old ones all the time.
Yeah.
And
as Lee Atwater pointed out.
Exactly so. And these new meanings tend to get created within the idiom that's used by small subculture groups, and then they diffuse out from there into the general population. That's exactly what's going on in terms of welfare being used as a phrase to describe black people, and you see it throughout the political language of the right. It started in the little John Birch Society clusters of these insular little
with Daddy Coke. And what's so bizarre is that there's more white people in this country on welfare than there are black people. But that hasn't stopped conservatives from using the word welfare as code for black people.
Exactly so, but that's if you trace these codes back to their origins, they begin in these little tight little subcultures of extremists, and then they diffuse out from there.
Yeah, well said, Ed. Thank you very much for the call. Good to hear from you, Cindy in Long Beach. You have some good news.
Good afternoon, Tom. I bring some very good news on the get the money out of politics, amend the Constitution front,
right,
and the great state of California. On Tuesday, I was in Sacramento to testify at a Senate committee meeting with other grassroots activists from MOVI, which is Money Out, Voters In, as well as our coalition partners like Democracy for America, Move to Amend, to support SB, Senate Bill 1272, which will put this on the California statewide ballot in November 2014.
Wow.
We plan to bring this issue front and center and pierce the media silence.
Now, what exactly does this ballot initiative say?
It actually says corporations are not people and money is not speech. And I'm putting the information on your blog now. But basically, it's a conversation opener to have the people of California say corporations are not people, money is not speech, and we need to amend the Constitution.
Right.
SB 1272 passed with ease through the Senate Elections and Constitutional Amendments Committee. That's the meeting on Tuesday.
Right.
We have a short window to get this done. But based on the reception we're getting from key legislators, we feel we have a very good chance in urging your California listeners to call their state assembly and their Senate representatives to support SB 1272. It is authored by Senator Ted Lieu and sponsored by Modi.
And what's the name for it?
It's called SB 1272.
But isn't there a name?
It's called the Overturn Citizens United Act.
Okay, great. Yeah, see, people, it's easier for people to remember names than numbers. So if you call your assembly person or your senator and say, please vote for the Overturn Citizens United Act, that'll work. Okay.
That's right. And we built a rolling conference that's moving from west to east. It's called the 28th Amendment Roadshow.
That's
it begins
cool.
in Berkeley this very night at 7 p.m. in Berkeley. I'm going to give you all the details. It will be in L.A. at the UCLA Law School.
Cindy, post it on our blog. We'll repost it. We'll put it, and Sue will put it in our newsletter. We'll get it out, okay?
28amend-movie.
Hang on.
To the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866.
Okay, Cindy, give me the URL real quick. We've got 10 seconds.
28amend-movie.org.
28amend-movie.org. Thank you, Cindy. Good luck. Welcome back, Tom Hartman, here with you on your media support group for We the People. Tom Hartman Program, fair and only slightly unbalanced. Pat in Reno, Nevada. You know, if they could at least admit that, you know, fair and slightly unbalanced. Great new slogan for Fox News. Pat in Reno. Hey, Pat, what's up?
Yes, how are you today?
I am great, but I'll get better. I hope the same is true for you.
I hope. No, yesterday I was listening to the conversation you had with the sheriff.
Mm-hmm. Sheriff Matt.
I was very much opposed to him. I think he had no good points at all. And I wished I'd have been there talking to him. I have been in Nevada since I was 19, and I'm 75 now. And the man that called about two callers ago hit the nail on the head. When I got here, the John Birch Society was trying to get in. It's the same old families. It's been in Nevada for years and years and years. This is a long time ago. Then they changed to the Eagle Forum. And now they're in with the Tea Party. They're in anything against government, anything against paying taxes. They don't want to follow any laws. They're in with that right-wing Tea Party that you could put in a circle. And you could put them right in there, the Ku Klux Klan right in there, the Nazi Party right in there. They're all mixed up in the same kind of goulash.
Well, I think you said it very well, I don't explicitly disagree with anything that you said there, Pat. Thank you, and thank you for the wisdom of your years of observation.
Well, thank you. And if you go back, you will find all of these written down.
Oh, I know. I'm old enough to remember about half of it. Thanks a lot, Pat. I appreciate the call, and thanks for watching Free Speech TV. Michael in Antioch, California. You're on the air, Michael.
Hello, Tom. I'd like to share a little story with you. In 1989, I was promoted to the first level of management for a global corporation, Fortune 500 global corporation, which had me put me on the hiring team for that site. And I went to my first hiring team meeting, and there were three other supervisors. And the human resources manager walked in to the conference room where we were waiting, and said that the plant manager says we have to hire, and it was like, he was just so down about it. We have to hire, and he used pejoratives to describe African Americans, Hispanics, and women. And it was like the other guys, it was like kids that it was raining outside, and they weren't able to go out for recess or something. They started pouting and stuff. And I guess the point I'm trying to make is this is as recently as 1989, and this is in response to Mr. Bundy's comment about riding by people's houses and seeing people out on the porch not doing anything.
Right.
And I just wonder how people know from their car where these people on the porch is. You know, did they just come from a job interview where they were turned down? I just get sick of hearing that I ride by this house and I see these people sitting there, so obviously they're lazy and they never tried to get a job, which isn't true. The other people that on that team, obviously in the past, had obviously turned people down because they were African American or Latino or women. So he doesn't know what they're doing, and it just ticked me off to hear that.
Yeah. And the real, I'm not sure ironic is the right word, but the interesting piece of this whole thing is that the worse the economy gets, the more, you know, I had on the TV show last night or the night before last, I was debating a couple of, well, it must have been last night. It was Wednesday. It was Lone Liberal Rumble. I was debating a couple of conservatives, and one of them starts going through this list of things that are wrong with the economy right now. You know, the unemployment rate, labor participation rate, blah, 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 blah. And I said, you're not complaining, Kevin. You're bragging. It's like these are, you know, these are the things that the Republicans have done. They've, you know, they have thwarted every significant effort ever since Scott Walker was sworn into the U.S. Senate and Obama lost his filibuster-proof majority, which is like 11 months into his presidency. Ever since then, they have done everything they can to damage this economy, including the sequester, including cutting off long-term unemployment benefits. And I can give you a long list of including. And then these Republicans sit around and complain about it. And what they're really doing is they're bragging. And here's where it gets really bizarre. The worse the economy gets, the more the working class, maybe used to be middle class, now working class or now unemployed class, white people, particularly those in the South who have never seriously in their lives associated with a person of color. White people are looking around going, I'm screwed. I'm out of a job. There's no job market for me. Who is my competition, right? Who is fighting, you know, against me? It must be those black people or it must be those brown people. And thus you have the, you know, the anti-immigrant sentiment. You have the racist sentiment. This is an old card they've been playing in the United States. I mean, in the 1880s, we passed I believe the one and only piece of legislation that explicitly denied people the ability to emigrate to the United States based on race. It was the Chinese Immigration Act, and it was because the railroads were bringing people in from China to break strikes by largely European immigrants. But, you know, the bottom line is that the worse the economy gets, the more racism becomes a potent political force. And the more the conservatives, the more the Republicans will play that race card. And they do it the way that Lee Atwater said, you don't have to use the N-word. You don't have to even talk about force busing or states' rights. Now all you have to do, and here's the quote, now you talk about cutting taxes. And these things you're talking about are totally economic things. The byproduct of them is blacks get hurt worse than whites. And people know, white people know that. And so it's just as if you had used the N-word. And that's what's going on. Michael, thank you for sharing your experience with us. It so resonates. Damien in Detroit. Hey, Damien, what's up?
Hey, Tom, how you doing, man?
Good.
Love your show. I just want to mention something to you. Your knowledge of economic history is great. Back during the Carter administration, when the high interest rates took place, the Republicans tried to, you know, they got this habit of change the reality to make them feel good. You understand what I'm saying, right?
Yeah, at least now, historically, yeah.
Okay, during the Carter administration, when the interest rates was like 20% or whatever.
Well, they were in the teens. The official rate was like 13.4. I bought a house back then, and the mortgage rate was 16%. That's how bad it got.
Okay, so your knowledge, was that caused by the U.S. failure to make payments that they borrowed to finance the Vietnam War? Was that one of the reasons?
No. I used to think that, and I've said that a few times on the radio, and I didn't really understand what caused inflation. And in the last year, I've gotten a number of these folks, L. Randall Ray and several of the other modern monetary theory people on to explain to me. And I think most Americans don't understand what causes inflation. There's the simple explanation, which is what Germany did after World War One. They had to pay back a billion marks to or whatever, they made a trillion marks, some enormous amount of money, and denominated in German marks to the other countries that got ruined during World War One. And so what they did was they just printed so many marks that the mark became worthless. And so it took a million marks to buy a loaf of bread, and they could pay off the Treaty of Versailles debt in 6 weeks. That's an intentional kind of inflation that, to the best of my knowledge, has only happened one or two times in the last few hundred years. Typically, what causes inflation is the shortage of an essential good or service. After the Black Plague in 1435, there was a shortage of labor that caused inflation, slight inflation. It actually caused an increase in wages, but that was inflationary. But what caused the inflation? For example, people in Mugabe. In Zimbabwe, Robert Mugabe is presiding over 1,000% inflation right now, and everybody says it's because he's printing money to run his country. It's not. It's because they're having a food shortage there, and as food becomes scarcer, the price goes up. Well, what happened to us here in the United States was in the early 70s, there was a war between Israel and Egypt, and actually there were two of them over a period of three or four years, and we took Israel's side, and in both cases, the Arabs cut off the oil to the United States. Now, when the Arab oil embargoes happened, immediately the price of oil went from like $10, $12 a barrel to like $30, $40, $50 a barrel, and that echoed throughout the entire economy. And that produced that inflation that was happening during the Carter administration.
So you would agree it's unfair to blame Jimmy Carter for that.
He had nothing to do with it. In fact, it happened when Richard Nixon was president.
So even if, let's say if Ronald Reagan would have been the president at that time, the same thing that happened with Carter would have happened with Reagan.
Well, the first 2 years of the Reagan presidency, inflation was still running over 10%. Hello?
Yes. Okay.
Yeah. So, I mean, Reagan still had that inflation. It took the better part of 6 or 8 years to wring that inflation out. And Paul Volcker did that by jacking up interest rates. But really what ended that inflation was the fact that the Arab oil embargo ended and the price of oil dropped back down. I mean, there's all kinds of theories about this. But really, if you look at it, that's what happened. So am I making sense, Damien?
Yeah, you may.
Have
a good day. Thank you.
This is something that, we all need, and I needed too. It's kind of a macroeconomics 101 lesson. What causes inflation? Inflation can be caused by a government printing too much money. That has never happened in the United States. It pretty much has never happened anywhere in the developed world, except for Germany after World War I. Usually, inflation is caused by a shortage of something really important.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
If it had just been a shortage of steel or zinc or copper or something, you would have seen a small inflation because they're just relatively used. But oil is used for everything, and that's why it caused that huge inflation. Kelton. Stephanie Kelton, yeah. And the other person who taught me about that was Stephanie Kelton. We need to get her back on. She is brilliant. And with modern monetary theory, talk about inflation and some of these myths that really do need to be busted up. Trip in Tomball, Texas, watching Free Speech TV. Hey, Trip, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom. Thanks for having me on.
Sure. Thanks for calling.
I was just a little skeptical about the comment that, the conclusion that you guys are making about, when people say that they're against, they're for tax cuts and they're against stuff like the laws, affirmative action.
Right.
I like your motto, fair and slightly off balance. I try to stay as balanced as possible, and I really appreciate how you take a alternative opinion. So I wanted to know what you think of this. I mean, there are many people who assume now that, let's face it. I mean, African Americans aren't the only people who are on welfare. I mean, everybody.
There's more white people on welfare than there are African Americans, although the poverty level is higher for African Americans than it is for white people.
Sure. But
let me make it very clear. That's not the fault of African Americans.
Of course. No. It's the fault of circumstance in our history.
It's the fault of white people. It's the fault of policies that have been put into place by white people for 500 years and are being maintained to this very day by white people. Let's just call it what it is.
White people in general? I don't think
no, not white people
white
in
man,
white, not white people in general. White people who are using fear or hatred of other people, typically racially, but sometimes not. I mean, you find the same thing with anti-Semitism, and you find the same thing with misogyny, men who hate women. But basically who are using fear or hatred of other people as a political tool to acquire power. This has been done by both political power parties.
We find this all over we find this even in the Black Panther movements. I see people who are
strictly for, you know, empowering themselves through dismantling other powers. And
see, here's the fundamental difference, Tripp. If you're white and you're saying, let's keep down black people, or let me rephrase that. If you're saying white and you're saying, you know, I want more, you've already got all that white privilege going for you. If you're black and you're saying, I want more, you're facing an entire institution that's trying to prevent you from getting it. I mean, the Black Panthers or any other, and in fact, the message of the Black Panthers has been so distorted by Fox News and other, you know, BS artists over the years.
I'm not bad for Black Panthers at all. I mean, I respect them fully, but yeah, I agree. I mean, it's more of a struggle for what we call minorities, though I don't like using that word at all anymore. I mean, disenfranchised groups of people who, you know, I mean, yeah, it's hard, but I mean, it's hard all over. And I think that saying that it's now, I mean, I would say the white supremacists are a minority group now. I mean, there are some of them who are in power, and there are groups like the lone wolves who infiltrate groups like the police and even our own.
Oh, there's certainly a minority trip among white people, but they're a large enough minority that they can swing an election if the Republicans can get them to turn out to vote. And this has been proven over and over and over again. The most obvious example that everyone agrees on was the Willie Horton ad in the Dukakis-Bush campaign. I mean, that was so blatant. But they are a large enough minority that they can swing an election. And that's all Republicans care about. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Fascinating, you know, that and I, as much as I find repulsive, maybe that's not even a strong enough word, Matthew Heimbach's belief that white people not only should be separated from other races, but are superior to other races. I believe I'm representing his opinions correctly. I may be wrong, but I believe so. I honor his willingness to speak his truth on national radio because the Republican Party is filled with politicians who are appealing to people, white people, who share that belief, who share those thoughts, but who will not say it out loud. And everybody's agreed to talk in code about it. Which is why I wanted to open the show with Matthew and have and just, you know, and he just said it right out loud. You know, as when he was a conservative activist, they loved him. As soon as he started talking about race, it was like, oh, no, you can't say that out loud. Say it in code. Fine. He said it in code for years. That's cool. But you want to start the white student union? No, ain't going to happen. Danette in Hinesville, Georgia. Hey, Danette, what's up?
Hey, Tom, can you hear me?
Just fine, thank you. People ask me that a lot. Is it because my voice is faint on your end?
No, I just bought a new phone, and sometimes it gives me feedback.
Yeah, no, it's fine. It's not the world's it's not the world's best audio, but it's just fine.
Okay, great. Yeah, I am an African American or a Negro, as Mr. Doofus Face over there in Nevada,
Mr. Bundy,
wants
yes.
to call me.
Yeah.
Yes, Mr. Bundy. I am so sick and tired of white people telling black people what's good for them.
Yep.
We don't need anybody telling us what's good for us. We did not ask to be here.
Yep.
We were brought here. We built this country. This country would not be what it is today if it were not for slavery. If it were not for black people, we would not have the United States of America.
Black people built the Capitol. They built the White House. You walk around the city and almost everything you see of consequence, you know, and of age was built by slaves. Pardon my interrupting you.
And so here's my issue. And you alluded to it with your last caller. White privilege is the water that we all swim in the United States of America. We don't see it as white privilege. It's just what's so. It's the norm.
Yes.
And for people to pontificate or to say anything about whether black people work hard or whether we don't work hard or what we deserve or what we don't deserve, a poor person out of the mountains of Tennessee that is white has a better chance of success in this country than an educated black person does, merely because they are white.
Yes.
And people need to understand that, and they need to accept that, and we need to stop tiptoeing around oh, black people just need to work harder. No, we are so hardworking that it used to be in the times of slavery, we would drop our child in labor and keep picking cotton while the slave master stole our child away and sent it to another plantation. So I don't want to hear how black people don't work. I don't want to hear how we don't have ethic, how we don't take care of our families. I don't want to hear any of that. It is ridiculous. It is disgusting. And this man, Mr. Bundy, he needs to stop mooching off the teat of the United States government. He either needs to pony up the $2 million to cover whatever cost government says he owes them, or he needs to go buy his own land and graze his own cattle somewhere else.
Two things that your comments evoked, if you don't mind my engaging you in conversation about it. The first is Paul Ryan, a couple of weeks ago, said we've got this whole subculture of men in the inner city, urban men in the inner city, who don't know what it's like to work and don't have any work ethic. And, you know, this is a problem, which he attributed to the fact that we have welfare programs in the United States, which therefore the Republicans want to destroy welfare programs. I am of the opinion that what he said and what Mr. Bundy said are qualitatively identical. The difference is that Paul Ryan is sophisticated enough to use coded language, and Mr. Bundy is a 76-year-old bigot who was never taught how to be a sophisticate in the political world. Would you disagree with that? The internet just went? Oh, I just lost Danette. Okay. Danette, if you're still watching me on TV or listening on the radio, my apologies, but it looks like our Comcast just killed our phone system, which happens with alarming frequency. It's incredible. So that, anyhow, but let me finish my rant in any case. Number one, I think that Paul Ryan and Mr. Bundy and Mr. Ryan are really basically saying the same thing. And the difference is the degree of sophistication. I think Sean Hannity is basically saying the same thing. I think, Limbaugh for years and years, this whole thing of, you know, government dependence. No, government, it's not about government dependence. It's about giving people a hand up, not a hand out, number one. And I have actually a recommendation for that. Number two, you mentioned white privilege, Danette, and thank you for saying that. The thing, I've done no polls on this, and I don't have a large number of African-American friends. For that matter, I don't have a large number of white friends. Louise and I pretty much are kind of introverts. But I'm guessing that most people of color know what white privilege is. And I can tell you from having grown up white 60-plus years on this planet, most white people don't know what white privilege is. And the number one privilege of white privilege is not having to worry about white privilege, is not having to wonder if that person parked somebody else's car instead of yours first because you were a person of color, or if you got stuck with the bad table in the restaurant because you were a person of color, or if you didn't get the apartment because you were a person of color, or if you didn't get – because white people they never even have to think like that. Did I not get that apartment because I'm a white guy? Did I get a lousy – did I just get, you know, told that I'd have to wait an hour and a half in the restaurant, whereas the people in front of me who were of a different race just got seated? Was that because I'm a white guy? Doesn't happen to white people. That's white privilege. And until white people begin to understand what white privilege is and start being aware of it, we're not even going to be able to have any kind of reasonably sophisticated conversation about race and what to do about race in this country.
Listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com, America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com, Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com, providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com, total protection. Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze. and EcoWine.com, your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartmann.com.
You're listening to the Tom Hartmann Program.
And welcome back. Tom Hartmann here with you, fair and only slightly unbalanced. And it's Thursday. Let's check in with our old friend Mike Papantonio, America's lawyer and host of Ring of Fire Radio, ringoffireradio.com. Pap, how you doing?
Tom, how are you?
Well, you know, we've got Comcast for our phones and our internet here right now, so our internet is down and most of our phones are down. Comcast, such a wonderful company, and I started out the show going off on how Tom Wheeler should, you know, Barack Obama should call him up and say, okay, I know you're getting ready for a $3 million job with Comcast as soon as you leave. You're fired, and I'm going to put somebody in who's going to put net neutrality in. And pretty much about 20 minutes after I said that, Comcast took down our lines.
No kidding.
No kidding. I absolutely believe it's a coincidence.
Oh, okay.
But it is one of the more bizarre coincidences to happen this year.
A big one. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Hey, just imagine Time Warner being mixed in there, huh?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, see, I don't even have that option. I mean, you know, we got nobody else comes into this building except
that'll
Congress.
Be a real home run.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyhow. A lot going on. We had in the first hour of the program, I had Matthew Heimbach on. He's been on before. He's the founder of the White Student Union at Towson University. He's a white separatist, sons of Confederate veterans.
Mm-hmm.
And he said that, you know, what Bundy said and what Paul Ryan said are basically the same thing. And, you know, he's glad to hear it. But it's but the problem is that when people like him or people like Bundy say it out loud, and don't use the sophisticated language that Paul Ryan uses, they get kicked out of the Republican Party, which is what happened to Matthew.
Yeah, well, I mean, here's the heart of the problem is they really don't believe in anything. I mean, if you want to drill down, anything meaningful, anything constructive. And what I mean by that, think about this just a second. These guys, they're absolutely delusional. If you take a look at what Bundy did with his group out there in Nevada, and you went person to person, you said, what is it that you believe? And you really say, let's have an honesty moment where you tell me what you really believe, and then let's drill down and see whether that seems to play out in your life. For example, what story that came in, I know you've seen it, where you had Frazier Glenn Miller, the man who, mass murder, Kansas City Jewish Center. Now, we find out that he was caught having sex with an African-American male hooker in the back of his car. Now, this is a guy.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
How did I miss that one?
Oh, yeah. No. It's look at Gawker. It's.
Yeah, I guess it just they didn't report it on Fox News. Okay.
Okay, but here's the point. This is a guy who has devoted his life to the idea of keeping the African-American minority down. And then we find out that he's having sex with an African-American male hooker in the back of his car. Pretty ugly scene. The scene was so ugly, as a matter of fact, the sheriff, the police officer who caught him said, you know, I really can't even describe it on scene. It was just so ugly and bizarre. Okay, now here's my point. If you go man to man, woman to woman in that crowd, and you really drill down to what is it that they believe, you're going to find out that they're delusional even about what they say they believe. And I think that's the difficulty. It's like trying to get a genie in a bottle when you talk to these people. It's all hate. It's driven by hate, Tom. I mean, you can dress it up any way you want. It's driven by self-doubt. If you did an MMPI and you took all of these people, I know quite a bit about this because we've had to do it many years trying cases. We've had this done, focus groups and psychiatrists and psychologists analyze jurors. Now, if you take the profile of this character Bundy or the, you know, this character Frazier Miller, and you put it on an outline, here's what it's going to look like. They sat in the back of their class most of their lives. If most of the time they got out of ninth grade when they were, you know, 19 years old and quit school, They're underachievers, woeful history most of the time of underachievement. I mean, you just go back and if you, time after time, I know this sounds like broad generalization, but it's not, Tom. They have focused the hell out of this. They know to a science what these people really look like. They're driven by their angst of their own failures.
Yeah.
They have never really exceeded at anything. And the reason I have to know that as a juror is as a lawyer picking a jury is I have to know what motivates these people. And so I don't know the fellow that you just interviewed. I don't know where the interview went or what you had to ask him, but if you really drill down, they're almost delusional about what it is they believe.
Yeah.
It's just rejection of everything.
Yeah. Well, he's just, you know, your basic white supremacist to separate the races, you know, let white people have their own lives kind of thing. And it's, you know, which is a particularly pernicious strain, frankly, in the United States, because they can make themselves sound rational in a certain way.
Well, they joke themselves, they kid themselves, Tom, into making it believe that they're rational. Now, to me, the bigger story here is the way that, you know, all the fools have rushed in. Before they even understood the questions, much less the answers, these fools being the, you know, Rand Paul and Dean Heller, who's a senator, Sean Hannity, these people who've come to the aid of these lunatics that were out there in a cow pasture with AK-47s. And you can only conclude a couple things, Tom. You can only conclude that either Rand Paul and Dean Heller and Sean Hannity, who's the mouthpiece for the Republican Party, all these people are Republican or the mouthpiece for the Republican Party, either they were too stupid to immediately recognize how hate-driven and how dangerous this Bundy crowd is, or worse yet, their real uncamouflaged character is exactly the same as those racists, those white supremacists, those Bundy radicals that were willing to kill, willing to shoot innocent police men in Nevada. And so either way, it's an ugly story for the Republicans because it's become their brand, Tom. This is their brand.
Right.
This is who they are. And all you got to do is go back and look at the people they've embraced. Ted Nugent called the president a subhuman mongrel, for God's sakes. Ann Coulter said she wishes that Timothy McVeigh had bombed all the people in the New York Times building. Rush Limbaugh, who's built his following ridiculing women, minorities, disabled children, and poverty, you name it. So this is the new brand of the Republican Party, and when you take a look at who it is they've attached themselves to, and then you say, okay, what is the character profile of these people? And you really, sometimes, Tom, you have a huge psychology background. You know what I'm saying is absolutely on point. They can figure out what the trends of character usually are.
Yep.
And they do it by analysis.
Yep.
They have huge analysis of these people, and this is who the Republican Party has embraced.
Yeah. I mean, you know, this is Lee Atwater back in the 1980s saying, you start in 1954 by saying N-word, N-word, N-word. By 68, you can't say N-word. That hurts you. It backfires. You say stuff like force busing, states' rights. Now, he's talking about the 1980s. He says, now you talk about cutting taxes, and these things you're talking about are totally economic, but the byproduct is blacks get hurt worse than whites.
Right. It's all trigger words.
It's all
trigger words.
It's all dog whistle. It's all dog whistle. We got a minute left here, Pap. I know you wanted to get into the Tea Party Radio Network article at Politico.
Oh, a remarkable story that is so underreported. My God, you've got Politico coming out and telling the truth about, you know, Rush Limbaugh being paid $9 million, Hannity being paid $1.5 million, Glenn Beck being paid $6 million. What are they being paid for? Who are they being paid by? They're being paid by right-wing conservative organizations. And, Tom, they don't even ask a guy like Hannity to think about the issue. They write down on paper what Hannity must say, what he's going to be paid to say. They pay him $1.5 million, and they say, Sean Hannity, say these 10 things. And sure enough, when he appears on the air, he says those 10 things. That's not advertising, Tom. That is far from advertising. That is basically paid advocacy. And in the history of media, it's always been not only frowned upon, at one time it was illegal.
Yeah, it's buying media. By the way, we've got your video back up. Comcast has, in its great mercy, turned our internet back on. Pat, always great having you with us. Thanks so much for the call. We'll be right back. 15 minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Be sure to check out Mike Papantonio's website, ringoffireradio.com, and listen to his program on the weekends all over the country. We'll be right back. And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, and Mike Papantonio. You're still here with us, aren't you, Pap?
I am, Tom.
Okay, cool. By the way, I just have to tell you, the guy who wrote that article, I'm forgetting his name, he called me up and interviewed me for the article because, you know, he put a quote in there from me. And I thought I gave him the world's best soundbite. I actually thought about it before. He says, have any advocacy groups on the left ever paid you, you know, directly or indirectly by an advertising or anything like that? You know, any of these billionaires, these very wealthy people to say anything on the radio.
Start laughing?
And well, what I said was, no billionaire has ever called me up and said, I'd like to give you money to go on the air and suggest my taxes should be raised.
You know, Tom, there's another side to this.
Yeah.
Think about this. The very fact that you don't have progressives supporting progressives the way that the lunatic conservative right supports their people. Now, like it or not, that's a problem with the progressive movement.
Yeah.
You've had this experience just as I have. When Air America was trying to stay alive, we went around to all these people who call themselves wonderful progressives. Yeah, we want to give money to help. And you go to, you know, you go to some of these organizations and just all you get is a blank stare. And what I concluded was that if it's not their idea, Tom, it's unimportant to a progressive. Now, I'm not suggesting progressives should be giving us money to say what we want them to say, but they certainly should be supporting the infrastructure of progressive talk.
Yeah.
Because right now, I mean, you know, when you got people like Randy Rhodes hanging up her show that she has with, you know, things start getting kind of weird here when you have such a small club here.
Yeah, and we don't have much of a farm team either because there's no local radio anymore.
No.
I mean, you know,
there's no farm team.
But anyhow, we're talking inside radio here. What's coming up on your not only do you do Ring of Fire Radio, of course, which we were just talking about, but you do Ring of Fire TV right here on Free Speech TV every Sunday at noon at Eastern Time. What's going up this weekend?
Well, I've got author David Nywert. He's going to talk about the ramifications of the federal government stepping down in the Bundy Ranch disaster, PR disaster.
Hmm.
Howard Nations, he's going to tell us how strong labor protections really have historically always created a better economy. There's no guesswork. It's empirical data. Linda Libson, she's going to explain how forced arbitration agreements are taking place with Facebook. Or, you know, what they're doing is they're sending you a coupon. Let's say Starbucks sends you a coupon. You take the coupon and you buy coffee with the coupon. You then are unwittingly agreeing to forced arbitration with Starbucks down the road for whatever right.
This is shrink wrap terms of service on steroids.
Exactly. We're going to have David Bromwich. He's going to talk about President Obama and it's such a disappointment for progressives. Why? Because he's not a president of conviction, according to Bromwich. He's a president of preferences, and it doesn't go beyond preferences.
I would agree with that analysis. I think that's a brilliant. I'd never thought of it in those terms, but it makes perfect sense.
Bromwich is a brilliant author, by the way, from just a very good writer. Investigative journalist, author, Greg Pallas, you know him well. He's going to talk about the 4 years since the Deepwater Horizon catastrophe here on the Gulf Coast.
Yeah, so you're going to have a heck of a show this Sunday. I'm looking forward to it.
I think so.
Sunday at noon Eastern Time. Of course, it replays every day here on Free Speech TV. And, you know, check over to freespeech.org, check the listings, or go to ringoffireradio.com and learn all about it. Pap, always great talking with you.
Thanks, Tom.
For coming by. Good seeing you. We'll be back. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And John Nichols, the Washington correspondent for The Nation, is on the line here. And hey, John, welcome to the program.
Tom, it's always great to be with you.
Had an interesting experience here about 10 minutes ago. Our internet went down and our phones went down. We're with Comcast. And in this building, there's no option. In most of Washington, D.C., there are only a few options. We can talk about the monopoly side of this, but then there's this net neutrality speed thing. I'm just saying to people, it's fine to contact the FCC In fact, they have a telephone number, 888-225-5322. And, of course, you can call your members of Congress at 202-224-3121. But I think if this president has any courage at all, he will call up Mr. Wheeler and maybe Mr. Clyburn and Ms. Rosenworcel and Mr. Pye and Mr. O'Reilly and say, you guys get with the program. I campaigned on this. You guys get with the program or find a new job starting tomorrow morning.
You know, I think, Tom, that your point is very well taken. In the piece that I wrote for The Nation today on Tom Wheeler, FCC chairman's proposal to essentially kill net neutrality, and it's very important to understand what he's doing. The Guardian, which is the most digitally savvy newspaper in the world, in their headline today referred to what Tom Wheeler is proposing as axe murder of net neutrality, literally to just take it apart. And to do so by ending the whole concept of free speech on the Internet, ending the whole concept that every communication is treated equally, creating a situation where wealthy interests, powerful interests, corporate and political, can buy a fast lane, whereas citizens, grassroots activists, they all have to live on a dirt road as regards the Internet. The Wheeler's proposal to do that is exactly the opposite of what Barack Obama campaigned for as a presidential candidate. But most importantly, Tom, it's exactly the opposite of what Barack Obama said in January of this year when he was talking about Tom Wheeler, and he said, I know my appointee to the FCC is committed to preserving net neutrality.
So why doesn't he fire his ass?
Well, it's a harder game than that. Wheeler is appointed, and he is approved by the Congress. And the painful thing of this, Tom,
but the president can fire him.
Yes, I understand what you're saying. I am also explaining one of the awful realities of politics, and you do this better than anybody on your show. That there are sub realities of politics, and that is the FCC. While you're supposed to have appointments to it, is actually a bargain between the Democratic and Republican.
So if he fires him now, all of a sudden you've got a 50-50 split, and the Republicans come in and they refuse to approve a new appointee, and things get even worse.
And it's always a deal-making. It's not just the president. It's also the leaders in the Senate.
Right.
Recommend. It's a terrible game.
So Tom Wheeler just made a decision that's going to guarantee him a $3 million a year job when he leaves, and we all get, you know, all I got is this lousy T-shirt, right?
Tom, it's worse than that. He doesn't need the $3 million job. This was Barack Obama. This is the thing that some of us worried about, including Bernie Sanders. When Barack Obama proposed Tom Wheeler for this job, Tom, what did Tom Wheeler do before?
That's right. He was a lobbyist for the telecom companies.
Yeah, for cable and Internet companies.
Yeah.
And what he is creating, what he is proposing here, despite what he says, he is claiming publicly, in fact, he pushed back. He actually sent a memo out late last night pushing back on the suggestion that he wants to take apart net neutrality. And this is the most Orwellian thing of all. He's saying, no, we're preserving all the protections. You know, content will be treated equally. We're going to regulate and oversee, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But it's a totally Orwellian construct because at the same time, he is saying, but we are going to allow Internet providers to charge wealthy interests, powerful interests, corporations, and political entities to get on a fast lane. And the way to understand that, Tom, is a very, very simple deal. Let's say that you are extremely interested as a citizen in learning more about what Walmart does and how it treats its employees. If you go online and you Google Walmart Watch, if you Google something related to Walmart, there's a group called Walmart Watch. There are grassroots groups that are trying to track what Walmart does. If they don't have the money, trying to get their information may be, you know, very slow, very delayed. At the very least, it's just the, you know, kind of the standard way. But boy, if you go on trying to get to Walmart, because they paid, they get to you instantly.
Well, not only that, the search engines use speed of response of servers as part of the criteria in their algorithms for where you show up in the search rankings.
Totally right. And here's where it gets the worst, Tom. As much as you and I may be concerned about corporate power and what corporations do and how they communicate, our deepest concern in a democracy ought to be about the ability of candidates for public office and political groupings, activist groupings, to communicate. And if you create a situation where the Koch brothers can buy the fastest delivery of political messages, and grassroots activists in small towns who may be battling the Koch brothers, we now know they're going into rural races in states like my home state of Wisconsin, those small town activists, they don't have the millions to pay for fast delivery of information. So when you Google your county and Koch brothers, because you want to find out what the Koch brothers are doing in your county, the Koch brothers information gets to you instantly, rapid downloads, as much information as you could possibly look at, but the grassroots challenge to it comes on that dirt road.
Incredible. Incredible. So what's your call for action?
Well, it's similar to yours. Look, we have a Save the Internet coalition in this country. It's a coalition of dozens of groups, civil rights groups, media reform groups, groups that you've worked with over the years.
You're doing it over at freepress.net?
Yes, at Free Press. I want to, full disclosure, I'm a co-founder of Free Press, so people should know that I'm sympathetic to it. But to say the Internet Coalition is much broader than Free Press. It has brought in on these issues Common Cause and the ACLU.
Is there a central website?
Yes, Save the Internet. Just go Google Save the Internet. You're going to get it right up at the top, and at least for as long as we can make
presumably
it.
It's SaveTheInternet.org, right?
Yeah, and okay. People should go there.
Check it out. Hang on just a second, Tom.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
John Nichols. You can read his writings over at thenation.com. John, thank you for another brilliant presentation. Thank you.
And Tom, thanks for being on this issue support.
It's the good, the bad, and the very, very semi-diurnally ugly, brought to you by my dear friend Veronique Raskin over at the Organic Wine Company, ecowine.com. The good, Stone Cold Steve Austin. During a recent episode of his podcast that's now making the rounds on the internet, the former WWE superstar, that's wrestling guys, you know, right? Went on an epic rant supporting same-sex marriage and bashing those who oppose it. Take a listen. Oh, we don't have it. Okay, well, that's okay. Yeah, we don't have it in the internet. Anyway, I couldn't have said it better, Steve, although I might have used fewer curse words. Oh, it's a good thing we don't have it. The bad, Will Infantine. During a Wednesday debate in the New Hampshire legislature about passing an equal pay bill, the Republican state rep argued that the bill wasn't necessary because men just happen to work harder than women. Seriously, you have this clip? Okay, here we go.
Men, by and large, make more because of some of the things they do. Their jobs are, by and large, riskier. They don't mind working nights and weekends. They don't mind working overtime or outdoors in the elements. When it comes to women and men who own their own businesses, so no one's telling them. This again comes to the United States Bureau of Labor Statistics.
You know, I can't even understand what this guy is saying. So let's just kill that sot right now. It needs to be subtitled. Anyhow, he was going off on something. Republicans wonder why they have such a hard time attracting female voters. And the very, very ugly Sandy Rios. While discussing the anniversary of the Boston Marathon bombing on a radio show recently, the conservative pundit, member of the American Family Association, said terrorist attacks happen because Americans are ignoring God. Let's see if we can hear this one. Oh, we don't have that one? Okay, cool. Anyhow, that's right. Sandy Rios thinks God will allow terrorist attacks to happen because he's a gentleman. That's very, very funny. Very strange. I don't, you know. Anyhow. So, a lot going on here. On the very day that our internet fails here on the Tom Hartman Program, and my apologies to those of you who might have been watching via some method or trying to call in via some method that required Comcast. Comcast croaked on us. But we're back. We're back. And so for the moment, our fate is in Comcast's hands. And therefore, I would suggest that you call the FCC at 888-225-5322 and tell them we want net neutrality. You can call your member of Congress at 202-224-3121 and say we would like net neutrality. enough of this stuff. Tom Wheeler, I mean, you know, the president, you look back at Barack Obama making all these highfalutin statements about how he's going to put in Tom Wheeler and Tom Wheeler's going to protect net neutrality. Tom Wheeler was a lobbyist for these guys. You got a hack running the FCC, and you're surprised that the FCC is running hackish? Anyway. Mike in Cleveland, Georgia. Hey, Mike, what's on your mind?
Yes, sir, just a couple quickie items. I don't know if you're familiar with the Golden Horns voting, but back in the medieval days, everybody would come together to vote, and then they'd say everybody with a golden horn may now vote. The second thing is...
Wait a minute. Are you saying basically that the richer you were, the more likely you were to be able to vote?
That was the only way to vote.
Uh-huh, yeah.
But if you look into that, that was back in medieval times. It's on record.
Yeah. Well, and we're kind of getting there again, aren't we?
The other one was we need to write America's stars. We need to flip that elephant upside down, get some of your graphics people to deal with that.
Yeah. Well, the problem is the Republicans are keeping those stars flipped upside down. They've got the satanic stars on the GOP logo, and I still can't find anybody who can explain to me why or how or when. Well, we know the when. It was right around 2000. It was when George W. Bush got involved in politics. But, well, you know, why? No idea, other than that it's the satanic star. And I've been on a crusade about this thing for 8 years, and not once have I heard anybody on network television raise this question. They are so afraid of that topic. Mike, thank you for the call. Speaking of network television, by the way, our friends over at Media Matters pointed out that about 9 or 10 hours ago, or 11 or 12 hours ago, whatever, Mr. Bundy's racist rant went public and viral on the Internet. And about 8 or 10 hours ago, Fox News stopped talking about Mr. Bundy. Absolutely not one word, not a bit of coverage. Finally, Gretchen Carlson on her show, she gets Joe Trippi to come on and talk about the evils of the XL pipeline. And Joe says, you know, it's sort of like that thing down at the Bundy Ranch. And as soon as he gets those words out of his mouth, Gretchen cuts him off. Says, we're not going to go there. Let me turn it back to another conservative who wants to say something. So if you watch Fox News, you wouldn't know that Mr. Bundy is out there talking about the Negroes, his phrase. You wouldn't know. This is why I call them Fox so-called news. I mean, if they said, you know, it's the Fox opinion channel, it's, you know, it's right-wing television, it's something, you know, feel, you know, whatever they want. But if you've got the word news in it, that's why I don't have the word news on my program. This is an opinion program. I mean, I'll share things that are in the news with you, but you're going to hear my opinion about them. Fox tries to pretend that they're conveying news. You know, they've got a psychologist or a psychiatrist interviewing David Gregory's friends and family, trying to figure out why his ratings are tanking. Did you see this? Politico wrote this up yesterday. Honest to God, NBC hired a psychiatrist to interview the friends and family of David Gregory. This is like 6 months ago, to find out why Face the Nation or Meet the Press, or Meet the Press is the Sunday show, why it's in the crapper. And what's wrong with David Gregory? I can tell you what's wrong with David Gregory. He's pretending he's doing news and he's doing opinion. And people understand the difference between the two, at least, you know, in the larger universe. Maybe you can get away with it on Fox so-called news. But on NBC, I'm sorry. When you're doing nothing but interviewing Republicans and doing nothing but throwing softball questions at them, and when you get an occasional Democrat on them, you give them the tough questions and David Gregory's bias is so obvious and has been for so long. People aren't tuning in because they know what to expect. It's like, you know, it's not like, hey, we might learn something. No, you're going to get the Republican talking points. If it's Sunday, it must be Republicans. You don't need a psychiatrist to tell you that. Holy cow. Greg in Thousand Oaks, California. Hey, Greg, what's up?
Hey, Tom. I'm really upset about this, and mainly because it parallels the Telecommunication Act of 1996, which Clinton supported and passed through, and now I can't listen to you on AM K-Talk 1150 anymore,
yeah.
As well as Randy Rhodes and Stephanie Miller. And so now, if this happens, who knows if I'm even going to be able to listen to you on the Internet.
Yeah, unless I pay a whole large chunk of change to Comcast or whichever, whoever your particular ISP might be, it may be that our website will be slow enough that I will come to you sounding like,
right. And say goodbye to the Democratic Party. You know, it's going to be corporatists that, you know, get access and get their word and get their message out. In Florida, during the election, when Gore was running, I went down to Florida. I had choices of Rush Limbaugh everywhere I went, but I didn't even hear the debate.
I know.
You know, it's ridiculous. And this is what is going to happen with the Internet.
Yep.
And it makes me sick.
It makes me sick, too. And it makes me sick that Barack Obama put this guy in charge of the FCC and, you know, a former telecom lobbyist and didn't expect him to suck up to his former and no doubt future masters. It's terrible. Greg, thank you for the call. Call. By the way, the toll-free number for the FCC is 1-888-225-5322. You can call and tell them what you think. 888-225-5322. And if you want to call a member of Congress, it's 202-224-3121. 202-224-3121. So anyhow, Pete in West Henrietta, New York, you're on the air. Hey, Pete, what's up?
Hey, Tom, how you doing?
Good.
Just calling to remind you and your listeners that Monday is April 28th, Workers' Memorial Day. In the recent past, we've been averaging between 5,000 and 6,000 of our fellow citizens who go to work don't come home. And
per year.
Per year. And another 50 to 60,000 that die from work-related injuries and disease, and an additional of 2-3 million people that are injured on the job. So I would suggest that some of your listeners, if they already are not already not aware of a ceremony in your community,
create one.
Contact your local union hall and find out if there is one, and if not, yes, create one.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
thank you for that, Pete. Thank you for that. And thank you for the reminder. I'm guessing that Louise and Sean were way ahead of me on this already. But, you know, that's also a clue for us about, you know, programming at least a guest segment on that day. Pete, thanks a lot for the call. And thanks for listening there in West Henrietta, New York. We will be back. It's 15 minutes before the hour here on the Tom Hartman Program on your media support group for We the People of the United States of America. Not We the Billionaires. No, they give billions of dollars to those right-wing talk show hosts, but this is We the People, you and me.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
By the way, that article is, it's probably still up over at Politico. It came out a couple days ago. It quotes me in it, and it's about all these millions that are being given to right-wing talk radio. It's called Tea Party Radio Network. And welcome back. Reverend Wallace in New Orleans, Louisiana, watching us on Free Speech TV. Reverend, you are on the air.
Hi, my friend. I'm glad to be on your show, and I'm certainly concerned with the stuff with the Arizona and the property and everything with this malicious type people sent out there with assault weapon against the policeman. And it's so sad that the Fox station, which has always been race baiting since Obama's been in office, to sit there and to egg that on and have people thinking that they're doing something right. It's a civil matter, whatever it is, let it fall out in the court. But to be in defiance of the government, we can't tolerate that type of stuff. And I support the president, I support Harry Reid and all of them. If we're going to allow that to happen in the United States, we were to get ready to just start using our own drones to deal with some of our people on our land. And it's a sad thing to see that this is happening in America, and this is the type of Republican Party that we have. To set back and to describe the president in different ways as being an ape, being a monkey, being different things, to be that open with some of the things that they have described this president with, and to be so mean-spirited, to shut down the company, to lose the rating for this company. How can we allow the Republican, as defiant as they are in the House, to take over the Senate? We'll have war on the street in America if we allow the Republican to advance with the Senate. It's just unbelievable the way this country is going with what they think. And they're not including me as an American. I'm a citizen. I'm born in America. I didn't come from Africa. I can't catch a lion or nothing. I don't know nothing about Africa. I'm born in the USA. And I'm a citizen, and I support, and I'm independent. I support Republican and Democrats. But I'm sad to see that certain Republicans set back and allow, like Ted Cruz and the other ones, that were set back and make race the reason that white folks would go out and vote. It's sad to leave this country, as great as this country is, the greatest America is, to be in the 21st century after Dr. King and all these people that died for us to live together in harmony, supposedly. But this is the type of Republican Party that we have today. They rather starve you to death, cut off programs to help people, and this governor we got in Louisiana, Jindal, he will not help. He's so unpopular. He's so unpopular in Louisiana, it's a crying shame to believe that this clown could be running for governor, for president, be a candidate for president of the United States. It's just disgusting.
Yeah.
What is going on with this country today? Is this what we're looking forward to in the 21st century, to have a fence in America to protect ourselves from one race from another? It's a sad, sad, sad view.
Yeah. Good preaching, Reverend. Good preaching. I'm totally with you. And what I have to say is, and I think it's fairly important, is that, you know, we always believed that this was a democracy. And now, after 10 years of research, we've got this guy, these two scientists, Giles is the name of one of them. We're going to have him on the show next week. Out of Princeton University, they looked at 10 years, 1,800 different pieces of legislation. And what they found was if average people supported it, it didn't pass. If billionaires supported it or groups like the NRA supported it, it did pass. We no longer have a democracy in this country. And to maintain the appearance of democracy, we have elections. And to make sure that the representatives of the billionaires are put into office, they're using race-based language to do it. And you're spot on right. Thank you so much for the call. Thank you for what you had to say. It's good to hear from you, sir. Thank you for watching. We'll be right back. Ellen Ratner will be with us at the Dark Radio News Service. Stick around. Back. Tom Harbin here with you, occupying the media 3 hours a day, 5 days a week. And let's check in with Ellen Ratner with the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com, brought to you by goatsfortheoldgoat.com, where you can get a crystal heart, a glass crystal heart made by women in South Sudan who have seen friends or family murdered in front of them in the horrific war. This is part of Ellen's charity to heal these women of PTSD over at goatsfortheoldgoat.com.
It's a good Mother's Day gift.
Perfect. Yeah. Mother's Day is, what, in 2-3 weeks?
Yes.
Something like that.
We can get you out those hearts like I'm wearing right away.
There you go. Louise wears one about 3 days a week. She's very fond of it.
Right.
They're beautiful. They're absolutely beautiful. So what's going on in the news, Ellen?
Oh, my gosh. Well, the FCC is now thinking of rescinding. There was that court ruling saying that the laws could not exist as they are on net neutrality. So now they're writing new rules for net neutrality. Well, Chairman Tom Wheeler, who is chairman of the FCC, has a very interesting background.
Former telco lobbyist.
Yes, and he was a managing director at Core Capital Partners, venture capital on early stage of Internet Protocol, then a Shiloh Group, development for telecommunications, et cetera, et cetera. I wonder why they're going back on net neutrality, don't you, Tom?
I wonder why the president picked this guy.
I mean, it's staggering.
Yeah. It's like, why would Obama pick somebody? It's like, you know, hey, we've got this hen house here. Who shall we pick? Oh, it's a fox. Perfect.
Exactly. Oh, yes. Not pretty. The First Lady is not going to be speaking in Kansas. She was going to be speaking to a high school graduation class because of Brown versus Board of Education anniversary, which, by the way, is also the anniversary.
Right, it was the Kansas Board of Education.
Did I say Kansas?
Brown
versus, yeah. Right. Yeah. Topeka, Kansas, sorry. And it's also, by the way, the 10th anniversary this year of gay marriage in Massachusetts, May 17th as well.
Whoa.
Most people aren't aware that Massachusetts court picked that date because it was the 50th anniversary of Brown versus Kansas Board of Education.
Really?
Yes.
Brown v. Board. Wow.
So, okay, so she's now not going to do it. There were 1,750 signatures because if she came, they were going to have reduced space to have people's families at this graduation, right. And they wanted their families. Okay, right. I guess so.
Well, there was also a great Sturm und Drang made in the right-wingosphere, you know, of the Drudge Land.
So. Right. Exactly.
So, you know, they backed off from Bundy. They backed off from Topeka. It's like...
Now what are they going to do?
Yeah.
Okay, well, we're going to move to Africa right now. The Pentagon said that there was this report that there was a base in Libya run over by Al-Qaeda. The Pentagon is now saying that the Daily Beast report was wrong today, that, in fact, our forces, the United States forces, were not controlling the base at the time. It was being controlled by Libyan forces, and they were getting assistance from the U.S. military only during the day in a quote-unquote kind of training kind of event. And they would this event was in June 13. This was a raid, but they would not say in that raid that whether there was people as well. So there were a couple of raids here on this area, but they're saying, the Pentagon is saying, no, we weren't around at the time.
Does this have something to do with Benghazi?
Well, it all has to do with Benghazi because it happened in Libya. Don't you know? What did you call it? The right wingosphere?
The foxosphere, yeah.
Oh, all right. I'll go with the right wingosphere. Okay. Let's also talk about another Kabul attack today. Three Americans working in a hospital. One was a pediatrician killed. This is not the first attack on Americans, not the safest place to be in Afghanistan. Speaking of unsafe places, you know, I have 12 students from South Sudan studying at St. George's in Grenada. They want to go home for the summer. I'm going, you're not going home for the summer, guys. Sorry. It's totally unsafe. Today, Samantha Power issued a statement about attacks on United Nations compounds that have been going on in South Sudan, and she said that they can't carry out their mandate. I heard from another source today that Bashir wanted by the United Nations...
the president of North Sudan, or of Sudan,
right.
The country
in
the north.
The country in the north, better known as Sudan, that's right, and that he is somehow blocking passageways for there to get food to these people in attacked areas.
Oh.
And it's he that's doing that.
Well, he wants the oil.
It's a mess. Well, he wants to take over South Sudan again.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
That's what he wants to do.
Yeah.
Crazy. Okay, the right-wingosphere, I love that. Mm-hmm. I'm going to coin it, tell them it's coined by Dr. Tom Hartman. Apparently, there's a group of senators that are now upset with the Obama administration about them trying to change immigration policy. They say they're looking at ways to circumvent the Constitution, so they're going after them as well.
So this is a group of presumably Republican senators who are going after Obama? Is that what
That's
you're
right, and they don't like the Department of Homeland Security.
When do they start impeachment proceedings?
Well, as soon as they possibly can.
I mean, they're impeaching a governor someplace because he was in favor of gay marriage, as I recall.
I actually didn't follow that one.
Yeah, they had four different articles of impeachment.
Really?
As soon as they think they're going to take over the Senate,
I actually don't think they're going to do it.
Yeah.
But you heard it from me.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, of course, the Secretary General of the United Nations back on the Ukraine issue. He's just saying the general things they say. All military action must cease. But
yeah.
Right?
Good luck with that. We did a whole hour with Dr. Stephen Cohen yesterday on this topic, and I would like to give you an article to take and read. Please.
I would love to take and read it because I'm asked all the time about it.
This is the piece. He's the guy. He knows.
Okay.
This is Stephen Cohen, a professor at Princeton. He's Katrina Vandenhoofel's husband also.
And oh, really?
And he's a Russian expert. He speaks Russian. He's... Anyway, back to you.
Okay, back to the good old USA. Oregon is now dropping their personal state plan, and they're going to be taking part in the federal plan for Obamacare.
Because their website wasn't working?
Their website was not working.
Yeah. What happened to the idea that Connecticut's was working so well they were going to franchise it to other states? Didn't work out.
Ask the governor.
Yeah, yeah. Well, John Kitzhaber, you know, I don't know him like buddies, but I've met him a number of times. I used to live in Oregon, and he had been out of politics for a while, and so he was around. He's very accessible. And he used to be a doctor. I mean, he still has an MD after his name, and he's no slouch, and he is a progressive. So if they're doing it, they got a good reason. Ellen Ratner, thank you.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey, friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com. America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com. Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com. Providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com. Total protection. Quicken Loans. Engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com, your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartman.com.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, 6 minutes past the hour. And C. Edmund Wright is on the line with us. Got to click the right button in the right place. Do I have you, sir?
Yes, I'm here, Tom.
Okay, great. Conservative commentator, contributor to Breitbart and the American Thinker, author of the book WTF, How Karl Rove and the Establishment Lost Again. And his website, C. Edmund, E-D-M-U-N-D, Wright, WRIGHT.com. The Twitter is C. Edmund Wright as well. Welcome back to the program.
Hey, always glad to be here.
Thank you. You sent us this article about how the Obamacare death panels are coming. What's with this?
The death panels obviously... was a phrase that I guess we can thank Sarah Palin for getting into our vernacular. Of course, she was widely panned at the time by almost the entire media establishment, certainly the Democrat Party almost 100%, and even some elements of the Republican Party. But what's actually happened is we found out more about this IPAB, the Board of Bureaucrats, 15 bureaucrats, who are going to have a whole lot of tremendous decisions or decision-making power.
This is called the Independent Payment Advisory Board.
Yeah. Exactly. Not a new Apple product. But, even Howard Dean, Slate, some other liberal sources have agreed that, yeah, these are, in effect, death panels. So while the term was provocative and it was rhetorical by, design and by definition, it was actually a teachable term. And, it tells the story. It's a very clarifying term.
Okay. Well, I can't argue with that. But it does raise some interesting questions. Obviously, if you are defining, first of all, because we don't have government health insurance, at least Obamacare isn't government health insurance. I mean, we do have a single-payer program, two single-payer programs, Medicare and Medicaid, and we do have socialist medicine in the United States, which is the VA and TRICARE. But Obamacare is provided by private for-profit corporations. So basically what this panel is doing is saying, here are the boundaries within which you private for-profit corporations have to work. And so here's the question that I have for you, Mr. Wright. If somebody is making these decisions, and somebody always has been making these decisions, wouldn't it be better to have a panel put together by an administration which is answerable to we the people, doing so with certain level of transparency required by law, subject to the Freedom of Information Act, for example? Wouldn't that be better than, for example, a company run by Stephen J. Hemsley, who made over $1 billion, or his predecessor, Dollar Bill McGuire, who made over $1.7 billion, both of them running one health insurance company, United Healthcare. And I would submit to you that the vast majority of their hundreds of millions of dollars in compensation came from United Healthcare's death panels, from saying to people, oh, no, we're not going to cover you. We just discovered you have a pre-existing condition. Oh, no, we're not going to cover you. We discovered you filled out your application wrong back 20 years ago when we started taking your money. You know, we're not going to cover it. We're not, you know, that kind of thing.
So which kind of death panels
are we going to have? Are we going to have, you know, rules set up by a government that's accountable to we the people, or are we going to have rules set up by a couple of billionaires?
Well, I got to tell you, a couple of premises there I disagree with. Number one, I think that Lois Lerner and the IRS have showed us that a government agency answerable to we the people,
Have you not been reading the news, sir? Two days ago, the New York Times filed a freedom, again, back to the Freedom of Information. They filed a Freedom of Information Act on that and discovered that liberal groups were targeted about 2-1 over Tea Party groups and conservative groups by the IRS for examination of their tax exempt status. So, you know, this whole canard that the only convicted criminal in Congress, Daryl Issa, the only guy who's ever actually been convicted of a crime, has been promoting is a lie.
Well, I have not seen a New York Times story, and I don't think it's a story.
It's not just the New York Times. I mean, it's reported all over the place. Liberal groups were singled out twice as much as conservative groups. I mean, all is feigned outrage, but the fact of the matter is we were able to find out because of the Freedom of Information Act. You will never be able to subject United Healthcare to the Freedom of Information Act to find out how many children died because they didn't get liver transplants Stephen Hemsley could make his $1 billion.
All right, hang on. First of all, that's very dramatic the way you put that up.
It's true.
First of all, the idea that children died so Hemsley could make a few more dollars, you don't know that that's true. Now, I'll say
it absolutely is true.
The health,
according to Harvard University,
the health insurance industry operates on about a 2-3% profit margin.
You're thinking of Medicare. Medicare is 2-3%. The health insurance industry was running anywhere from 25-40%. And Obamacare says that if you are a multi-billion-dollar health insurance company, you can't take more than 20% off the top. And if you are a multi-million-dollar health insurance company, you can't take more than 25% off the top.
Hold on a second. You got your facts wrong. You're just talking about the underwriting margin and pretending like there's no cost of doing business, there's no overhead cost.
The total overhead for Medicare is 3%.
Well, I don't know.
It's a matter of record. Matter of public record. Total overhead for Medicare is 3%. The amount of money, if you send $100 to Medicare, you will get back $97 worth of health care. If you send $100 to United Healthcare, you will get back $80 worth of health care.
Tom, there was more Medicare and Medicaid fraud in two counties in Florida around Miami than there was gross profit for the entire private health insurance industry.
You don't think there was ever fraud committed against United Healthcare?
Okay, sure there is. No, I understand there is, and I do understand.
So should we shut them down just like we should shut down Medicare because they've been the victims of fraud?
No, I didn't say we should shut down Medicare. I just said that the idea that a government bureaucracy is going to waste more money just on typical government inefficiency.
Well, if they're running at only 3% and they're having a fraud problem, why don't we raise their budget so they can run a 4% and they can nail the fraudsters? Why is it that the Republicans constantly cut the budgets of investigative agencies? I mean, they've cut back the IRS to the point where the IRS can't even find the billionaires who are stashing their money overseas.
Every now and then they are slightly reducing the baseline budget guaranteed increase every year.
Right, and as a result, the IRS has had to lay off inspectors.
They don't have to lay off inspectors.
They've done it every year for the last 4 years.
Government employment's at an all-time high, Tom, and they've hired 17,000 new ones just for Obamacare.
No.
Yeah, I mean that was in the bill. 16,000, I think, was the figure. So,
IRS agents? No.
Yes, 16,000 IRS agents were hired as part of Obamacare. You can look that up. That goes back to 09, 010 when we were debating this.
Yeah, I will look that up because I don't believe it.
Yeah. Yeah.
But even if that's the case, okay, fine. If we've got to collect taxes to pay for something that's helping people, what's wrong with that?
But Tom, the
you don't think United Healthcare has 16,000 people working for it?
I have no trust in and no respect for the bureaucratic microbes hiding in cubicles in big government agencies. I just think that is the worst.
But you're just fine with the bureaucratic microbes hiding in cubicles over at United Healthcare, where if you go to United Healthcare and protest out in front of their building, they can have you arrested. You can stand out in front of HHW all day long.
That's fine. Neither one's going to do any good. The fact of the matter is United Healthcare cannot tax me, cannot jail me, cannot regulate me. If I have a problem with United Healthcare,
they can just steal from you. They can just steal from you. Okay, all right. Well, I guess what we're coming down to is the old debate about, you know, government versus not. But I get and respect your point of view, sir. C. Edmund Wright, the website cedmundwright.com. Thank you for dropping by.
All right, Tom. Anytime.
Good talking with you.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
I still would much rather have, if we're going to define the rules of the game of health insurance, I'd much rather have it be somebody accountable to me at the ballot box. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. I'm over looking at Conscious Life News. The headline, I was a paid internet shill, how shadowy groups manipulate internet opinion and debate. And then update, January 12th of this year, CLN, Conscious Life News, has received a takedown notice asking us to remove this article on the basis that it is libelous and utterly false, from someone claiming to be an agent of the above top secret's parent company. They're investigating. Update January 17th, we've requested clarification. Update April 3rd, well, that goes back to 2012. Yeah. Very interesting. Anyhow, I was a paid internet show. Sean, in Point Pleasant, West Virginia. Hey, Sean, thanks for watching Free Speech TV on Dish Network. What's on your mind?
Did you say...
I said, it says Sam. Sam, how you doing, my friend?
I'm alive. Praise the Lord and bless you guys for giving me a reason to live.
There you go. Well, thank you. I hope you are doing well and you've come through your cancer surgery and everything okay. Sam, how you doing?
Well, I'm back on chemo. Came back after 6 months.
Oh, geez. Well, you're in my prayers,
my friend.
As long
as I take the treatments right and eat right.
Yep.
Okay. I was wanting to talk to you about something that happened 7 years ago, the very first time I ever called you. We had a very bad introduction to each other about the N-word.
Yes, sir.
And I was trying to explain to you back in about, you've been a good mentor to me. The N-word, hillbilly, wetback, those are code words for slaves in some places.
Mm-hmm.
And then about, I was looking up in the Associated Press book, and jargon is the words you all... I use in certain areas, in certain places, there's a jargon. You know
sure.
what I mean? Like a slang.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's me. I mean, you can say the N-word 10 times, and nobody probably get upset. But some people say it one time, you can get really upset. You know what I'm trying to say?
Well, if what you're trying to say, Sam, is that everything has context, you're not going to get a dispute from me about that. But what's... Is there a larger point you're trying to make beyond that?
Well, that one man, that one black gentleman was on there a while ago. He made, some people use the N-word as a blinder for ignorant people, and then you get your focus off on the wrong thing.
Right, right. Well, and my point is that what conservatives have been doing for years and years is not just using the N-word. They're using race, period. And like Lee Atwater said, we no longer need to use the N-word. We don't even need to talk about forced busing anymore. All we have to do is say tax cuts and people or welfare. And instantly, white racists know what they're talking about. And boom, you got the white racist vote.
There's other code words, right? Like
yeah.
I said about in certain places, the N-word, hillbilly, wetbacks are code words for slaves. I work beside these people.
Yeah.
And, anyways, I just want, you know,
yeah.
your debate's going good about government having to pay, you know, for people's food and their shelter and stuff because of low wages at Walmart.
Yeah.
And FCC, they're selling out. I hope they're not selling out on us.
Yeah, well, they are. They are. And we need to speak up. Sam, thanks a lot for the call. We need to speak up. I'm telling you. We need to speak up. We'll be right back. this net neutrality thing, or the death of net neutrality that Tom Wheeler seems willing to preside over. This is how plutocracy works. This is how monopoly works. This is, you know, in the largest sense, it seems like what this is all about, allowing big corporations like Verizon or Comcast to charge an extra fee to other big corporations like Netflix or Amazon to deliver instant information over the internet at lightning fast speed, and then saying to smaller websites, you know, you're going to be on the slow path, on the dirt road. It seems like it's about the internet. And it seems like it's about the information commons, that the internet is part of the commons of the United States, the same way our public roads are. And, you know, occasionally we'll have a high-speed road in exchange for behavior that we want to incentivize. In other words, we want people to carpool. So, you know, three people in a car, you can drive in the HOV lane. But that's really to help save the world. I mean, that's to reduce carbon emissions. There's a reason for it that we all of society benefits from that. That's not, we don't do HOV lanes so that cars that can go 0 to 60 in under 8 seconds can go on them. So your Porsche, your Mercedes is on it, but your Ford is not on it. Do you understand what I'm saying? We don't do HOV lanes for the benefit of a corporation. We do them for the benefit of a public good. What the Internet commissioners, and Tom Wheeler as the chairman, is proposing is to do HOV lanes on the web for the benefit of particular corporate giants. Now, that's pretty bad. But here's where it gets even worse. The way that big monopolies enforce monopolies, the way that big monopolies enforce monopolies is by restricting access to markets to smaller potential competitors. You know, back in the 1890s, when the government of Ohio first went after John Rockefeller, Standard Oil of Ohio, he was based out of Ohio. They went after him because he was cutting deals with the railroads, where the railroads would carry his oil. I don't remember the dollar numbers. It's been 15, 20 years since I read the biography of Rockefeller that had all this in it. I quote some of it in my book, Unequal Protection, and it's probably footnoted in there. But let's just make up some numbers because I can't remember the exact numbers. But they would carry his oil for, let's say, you know, a dollar a gallon or a dollar a barrel. But his competitors, his smaller competitors, he was big enough. He constituted 60, 70, 80% of their business. His smaller competitors, the deal he had with the railroads was they would charge the smaller competitors $3, $4, $5 a barrel. They wouldn't say, no, I won't carry your oil. They would just say, sure, $5. And then the smaller competitors, oh, here's a number for Tom Wheeler. Here's the actual number straight through. Apparently the number I was giving out was not Tom Wheeler's number. Okay, here's Tom Wheeler's number, 202-418-1000. And you can go to freepress.net for information on this. 202-418-1000. What was the number I was giving out? Anybody know? You don't know? I know I was giving out the correct number for Congress. But anyhow, Tom Wheeler's office, 202-418-1000. And you can sign the petition over at freepress.net. Okay, so anyhow, back to monopoly, back to my rant. The way that monopoly gets enforced is the way that John Rockefeller was doing it. The giant monopoly basically makes it harder for new startup competitors to bring their product to the marketplace. Well, the new marketplace in America is the web. Right? I mean, people look around and they go, you know, why are these stores going out of business? It's more Amazon than anything else, frankly. And, you know, other smaller retailers as well. But, I mean, everybody's moving to the web. Commerce is moving to the web. One of the things that astounds me, I'm looking at my board right now, and I've got, out of 12 calls, 12 people who are on hold right now, I've got at least three of them who are watching or listening online. I mean, you know, 2 years ago, it was one out of 100. Now it's, 30 out of 100, and I'm guessing in 2 years it's going to be 60 out of 100. And so if Comcast comes to me and then, for part of the United States, and then Verizon comes to me for another part of the United States, and then AT&T comes for me, for another, and they all say, hey, cough up. It's going to cost you $50 extra a month or $100 or $50,000 in order to have your web stream delivered with the same speed as YouTube, which can afford to pay for it, or Google, or, Netflix has actually already cut a deal with Comcast, where they're already giving them money. That's how monopoly gets enforced. What the FCC is proposing here is not only an obscenity with regard to the public commons, the information commons, that the internet should be, instead of doing this, Tom Wheeler should be declaring that the internet providers, ISPs, are common carriers. And if you want to call and leave a message for Tom Wheeler, the message should be declare ISPs, internet service providers, as common carriers. Then they become like the phone company. If I call you up and we have a conversation about the weather, versus I call you up an hour later and I say, hey, let's do a business deal. I'd like to buy $50,000 worth of your product, and I'm going to sell it and make another $50,000. I'm going to make a $100,000 deal here. I'm going to make a $50,000 profit. And the phone company's listening in, and they go, oh, you just made a $50,000 profit? We're going to charge you $200 for that phone call. We're only going to charge you $1 for the phone call where you were talking about the weather. They can't do that. The phone company can't do that because they are a common carrier. They cannot charge you based on who you are or what your content is. Tom Wheeler wants to change that with regard to the internet. That's a crime, in my opinion. I mean, a moral crime. But he's also enforcing monopoly.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
If you think it's all warm and fuzzy that Steve Jobs or Mark Zuckerberg could start a business in their garage, that goes on the internet, those days are soon going to be over. 28 minutes before the hour. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Obamacare death panels. Amazing. I was just reading Tom Wheeler's blog. He actually has a blog. Where is it? I printed it out, and then I closed the window. Oh, here it is. There's been a great deal of misinformation that has recently surfaced regarding the draft open internet notice of proposed rulemaking that we will today circulate to the commission. He writes on April 24th, that would be today. The notice proposes the reinstatement of the open internet concepts. Notice he's not using the phrase net neutrality. Adopted by the commission in 2010 and subsequently remanded by the D.C. Circuit. The notice does not change the underlying goals of transparency, no blocking of lawful content, and no unreasonable discrimination among users established by the 2010 rule. Well, it's not users we're talking about. It's providers. And what the heck does unreasonable mean? But that's a whole other issue. The notice does follow the roadmap established by the court. This is the court that struck down net neutrality and said, if you want to have net neutrality, Tom Wheeler, all you have to do is declare that the ISPs are common carriers. His entire blog could have been one sentence. I hereby declare internet service providers, parentheses, ISPs, close parentheses, are common carriers. Period. That's all he has to do. That's it. Anyhow, he says the notice does follow the roadmap established by the court as to how to enforce rules of the road that protect an open internet and asks for further comments on the approach. It is my intention to conclude this proceeding and have enforceable rules by the end of the year. To be very direct, the proposal would establish that behavior harmful to consumers or competition by limiting the openness of the internet will not be permitted. Really? Internet accounts have reported that the earlier, incorrect accounts have reported that the earlier policies of the commission have been abandoned. Two points are relevant here. One, the Court of Appeals made it clear that the FCC could stop harmful conduct if it were found to be not commercially reasonable. Oh, really? Isn't that sweet? Acting within the constraints of the court's decision, the notice will propose rules that establish a high bar for what is commercially reasonable. In addition, the notice will seek ideas on other approaches to achieve the important goal consistent with the court's decision. The notice will soon observe, will also observe that the commission believes it has the authority under Supreme Court precedent to identify behavior that is fully and or flatly illegal. Let me translate that into English. He's saying, we as a big government agency, the FCC, are going to get to decide what is and isn't a commercially appropriate behavior on the internet. We're not talking about pornography here. We're talking about Netflix versus the startup guy in his garage. I would think that the right wing would be going nuts about this. Because what he's saying is, we're going to create this giant big government bureaucracy to micromanage all these companies on the internet, when all he has to do is say, ISPs, internet service providers, are common carriers. They may not inspect the content or the source of the data going through them and charge a different price either to the provider or the recipient based on that source or that content. Period. It's simple. But no, the guy who's the former lobbyist for the internet companies has to make it complicated. Number two, it should be noted that even Title II regulation, which many have sought and which remains a clear alternative, have only bans, quote, unjust and unreasonable discrimination, end quote. In other words, once again, we're going to play judge and jury here and figure this stuff out. If I'm, you know, I'm not an FCC lawyer, but if I'm reading this right. The allegation that it will result in anti-competitive price increases for consumers is also unfounded. I've never said the price increases are going to go to consumers. They're going to go to providers. You know, Rush Limbaugh got $9 million from billionaires. Sean Hannity got millions of dollars from billionaires. They spiff these right-wing talk shows. There are no billionaires giving me any money. If the ISPs come along and say, hey, you want to carry your show over the internet? It'll cost you. I don't have a billionaire to go to. It should be noted that even Title II regulation, okay, the allegation that it will result in anti-competitive price increases for consumers is also unfounded. That is exactly what the commercially unreasonable test will protect against, harm to competition and consumers stemming from abusive market activity. To be clear, this is what the notice will propose. I'm reading to you from Tom Wheeler's blog. To be clear, this is what the notice will propose. Number one, that all ISPs must transparently disclose to their subscribers and users all relevant information as to the policies that govern their network. Yeah, you ever read those terms and conditions? I didn't think so. Number two, that no legal content may be blocked. We're not talking about blocked. We're talking about speed. And number three, that ISPs may not act in a commercially unreasonable manner to harm the internet, including favoring the traffic from an affiliated entity. Now, that would mean, let's say, Comcast owns NBC, so he's going to make a rule that's, and Comcast does own NBC. So he's going to make a rule that says that Comcast can't slow down ABC and CBS and speed up NBC just because they happen to be affiliated. But what Comcast can do is they can say, you know, if you want your television network to stream across the web fast, it's going to cost you an extra $1 million a month. NBC pays the million, CBS pays the million, ABC pays the million, but the NBC million that got paid goes to the company that owns NBC. I mean, we are back in the era of Teddy Roosevelt and John Rockefeller. Anyhow, I have been ranting enough on this. Let me bring you into the conversation. Charlie in Madison, Wisconsin. Hey, Charlie.
Hi. My reaction to all of this is to, we have a municipal internet here in Madison that, you can just be out on the street and you can get wireless on your phone or your laptop. The reaction I have here is that let's put them all out of business and build a municipal
common carrier. You know, we'll declare the common carrier and just build it ourselves.
Yeah, like they do in South Korea, where they've got the fastest internet service in the world. Great idea. Charlie, thank you. I'm totally with you. Joe in Chicago Heights, listening on CPT. Hey, Joe, what's up?
Hi. I was just going to make a comment of what you were alluding to, that the net neutrality issue is not just as bad as simply having to pay more money to provide high-speed content to the users. What I've been reading was what the internet providers want is the ability to control the flow of internet content based on what they claim to be their need to provide a bandwidth that's available.
Right.
Because in the last several years, whereas people used to just get their internet content from a computer that was wired into the internet through DSL, fiber optic, or cable, most people are now getting internet content to data cell networks.
Well, not most people, but it's a growing percentage. The most people are still getting it over a combination. They're getting it along with their cable TV. Most people are getting it over cable.
Right. I don't know the exact numbers, but yeah. I know that it's supposed to flip.
Yeah.
And they're saying they don't have the bandwidth to provide it, so they have to control the flow. So that they can.
Well, they're already doing that, and the FCC is allowing that because over the air carriers are regulated differently than hardwired carriers, and so it has been legal for some time for AT&T to charge you, you know, X number of dollars for 1 gigabyte of data going into your, you know, smartphone versus 5 gigabytes of data per month. They're already metering your internet usage.
Right, that's for the consumer to pay for.
Correct.
But what they want to do is say, we can't send these internet services out to the consumers because we don't have the bandwidth. So we're going to decide who gets through to you.
Right.
And some of that's going to be based on, Fox News paying them. And some is just going to be based on what they say they can do.
Yep.
So if they want to promote candidates that are going to give them more tax cuts and eliminate capital gains and open up more avenues for them to make money, that's what they're gonna promote. It's a really horrible thing, potentially. It's gonna further erode the quality of information that people get.
Which brings me back to my conversation about common carriers. People don't understand what common carriers are. Common carriers, when the government declares something a common carrier, they say it as in the commons. You know, a trucking company is a common carrier. If they're moving your furniture, you can buy different levels of insurance against breakage. But they can't say, you know, you've got really fine furniture, so we're going to charge you $100 a ton, whereas the guy down the street who's got mostly plywood furniture, we're only charging him $40 a ton. They can't look at your furniture and come up with a different price. They charge by weight. Similarly, on the telephone, they can't listen into your phone call and say, you know, he's having a business call and he's making money. We're going to charge him an extra buck and a half for that phone call. They can't do that. They're common carriers. And all they have to do is all the FCC has to do is
to the Tom Hartman program.
I'm hearing. Yeah, you need to reboot that computer. All the FCC has to do is say that Internet service providers, the companies, the Comcast of the world, the Verizons of the world, the AT&Ts of the world. These companies are common carriers. They cannot discriminate based on what the content is or where the content is coming from. And it's just, it is so straightforward. Joe, thank you for the call. Well said. We'll be back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
I notice a few people want to talk about a few other things, too, like Common Core and Iraq War and that kind of thing. We'll get into all this. There's plenty of time. We'll get into all these things here in this 15 minutes.
Yeah.
Which, that's interesting. He says it should be noted that even Title II regulation, which many have sought and which remains a clear alternative, that's common carrier. So he's asserting that common carrier is still an option. That's interesting. Well, there's a small little drop of sunlight in an otherwise vast pool of mud. Gus in New York City listening on WBAI. Hey, Gus, what's up?
Hey, Tom. I heard you talking about the outrage over the product placement and the Common Core test.
Yeah, that was a couple days ago, but sure, bring it up. Go for it.
Yeah, well, I'm a school teacher, and I administer these tests.
Mm-hmm.
I strongly encourage anybody listening that has kids in third grade to eighth grade to opt out of the test. product placement is only one of the problems, but, you know, they have those little trademark symbols, and then there's an asterisk at the bottom of the page that says, you know, Apple iPods are a registered trademark of Apple LLC Incorporated.
Right.
And these kids are trying to take this test, and they're like, they're raising their hand. What does this mean? Why is there an asterisk there and a legal, like, you know, statement?
Right.
And the teachers are not allowed to say anything about it. So, you know, the fact that they're doing that means that, you know, it shows that Pearson and the people that write the test are making money off it, and that they have to do that legally. It's just really inappropriate to put those passages in the test. And the outrage over it has been huge. So you're starting to see in New York State, what they did was they took away a couple of the provisions that came along with the whole Common Core package and Race to the Top, and they just announced that they are eliminating the data mining that was going to be done by InBloom.
Mm-hmm.
And InBloom in turn announced that they were shutting their doors. So that was one victory. But a lot of people don't realize what's still happening to teachers, because Governor Cuomo has announced right in the middle of the testing about 3 weeks ago that the tests don't count for kids, that there's not going to be any decisions made based on advancing to the next grade. It won't go on their transcripts. But they're still saying that they count against the teacher's evaluation.
Yikes.
So we're telling the kids, you take these tests, they don't count. But then they're still saying...
But my job depends on it.
Right.
Yeah.
If
parents opt out in large numbers in your classroom, is that a black mark against you, or is that just, you know, whichever it is?
It depends, Tom, because if the kid was going to get a high grade and they opt out, then that counts against the teacher.
Right.
And that's usually the more savvy family.
Right. If they're going to get a low grade and they opt out, then your average goes up.
Right. But here's the kicker. And most parents don't know about this. If parents knew about this, what was happening to teachers, they would probably be more likely to opt out. What they don't realize is that most teachers they have their evaluations tied to math and English tests.
Right.
But most teachers are not math and English teachers.
Right.
So if you teach dance or Spanish or science, you're still beholden to these test results in math and English. And we were told in my school that we can choose.
That's crazy. Gus, I'm sorry we're out of time, but thank you for sharing what you did. It's very illuminating. And thanks for listening to WBAI. We'll be back. 10 minutes before the hour, defending America from the weapons of mass deception. Tom Harbin here with you. Ken in New York City listening on WBAI. Hey, Ken, what's up?
Hey, Tom, how are you? I'm a fairly new listener. Love the show.
Thank you.
And I guess I'm completely changing the subject, but I've had some heated debates with some people about the Iraq War, which I personally feel was such a crime perpetrated on our country to, you know, and the soldiers that died and got maimed and the suicide rates of our soldiers. It's just horrible. And I feel that we obviously went there for oil. And some people would say, well, where's the oil? How could you say that?
Right.
And I was just curious, in your opinion, why we did attack Iraq, and maybe put simply how I would explain I'm curious if you feel we went there for oil.
Yeah, there is no doubt that we went for oil. And where the oil is it's on the world markets. If oil is going into the world market, it doesn't have to come into the United States. It can go anywhere in the world, and it will reduce the price of oil all over the world and increase the availability of oil all over the world. So, oil is what's called a fungible commodity in that regard. Clearly, Larry Klayman, the right-wing champion of JudicialWatch.org, sued the Bush administration and got the documents from Dick Cheney's Energy Commission meeting. Cheney was given two jobs by George Bush when he became vice president. The first was to head up the Counterterrorism Commission and look for bin Laden and avoid the danger that bin Laden was going to attack the United States, which Bill Clinton and Al Gore and Sandy Berger had informed Bush and Cheney and Rice about. And the second and that commission never got around to meeting until the first week of September of 2011. and excuse me, 2001, you know, a few weeks before 9/11. And the second job he was given was to run the Energy Task Force, which met without a single environmentalist, without a single alternative energy person. It was entirely the fossil fuel industry, met in secret, and in one of their very first meetings, they drew up maps of the oil fields of Iraq and a list, a database, a list of countries and companies around the world, and matched particular oil fields to particular companies. Who are we going to sell this oil to? And in fact, a lot of those companies are the companies that now have the oil. Iraq is back up now to pumping 3 to 4 million barrels a day. They were pumping about a million a day during Saddam Hussein. And, you know, Rachel Maddow did a great one-hour documentary on this for MSNBC, where she just followed the money. There is absolutely no doubt that this was a war for oil, period. And oil and money, the money associated with oil. And it was run by two oil multimillionaires, Dick Cheney and George W. Bush. Cheney had a second motive, and that was that just before he became vice president, he was one of the larger stockholders in Halliburton, and he was the president of Halliburton. And under his command, under his leadership, Halliburton had acquired Dresser Industries, which had this huge asbestos liability. Dresser Industries was one of the companies that was associated with killing my father, and you know, with mesothelioma, with asbestos cancer. And Cheney didn't think that the asbestos lawsuits were going to come out to be a big deal. Turned out they were. And as a result of that, Halliburton was within 6 months or a year of bankruptcy when Cheney became vice president. So suddenly he's got a war, and who's the company that he picks to do all kinds of things for that war? Halliburton. And Cheney kept his Halliburton stock. So Cheney became much richer as a result. He saved the company that he had run into the ground with this acquisition of Dresser Industries. And in the process, these guys made a fortune on oil. So, Ken, that's the story. Thanks for the call. Lee in Chicago, listening on WCPT. Hey, Lee, what's up?
Hey, how are you? I want to push 2 points, and I'd like to really put some try to start a movement. We're constantly hearing about the president being a lawbreaker, a man of lawlessness. And we have been ignorant on another point I want to make.
You mean we who watch Fox News are hearing that?
We as citizens.
Okay.
If you take a look at the definition of who Jesus Christ calls lawless,
well,
it was the faithful people, followers of him, who called him Lord, Lord, and talked about all they did. And he said, "Depart from me, you people of lawlessness. I was hungry, and you did not feed me.
Right.
I was thirsty, you did not give me drink."
Right. You're quoting Matthew 21. Yeah.
Right. Now we need to, when we hear these Bible thumpers, if you don't work, you don't eat, we need to be pushing back.
Yeah. No, Jesus was the original liberal. I'm totally with you. And I have these debates with them on, probably not more than once a month, but on a fairly regular basis, because I think that it's really important that we get the meme out that true religion, whether it's Christianity, Judaism, Islam, Hinduism, Buddhism, you name it, true religion has at its core a moral message which is absolutely consistent with a progressive worldview. Thank you, Lee, for the call. Yasha, listening on WBAI in Stanford, California. You must be listening on the web. Hey, Yasha, what's up?
Hi. I just have a small comment.
Mm-hmm.
And half an hour ago, there was a caller who told you that 15,000 employees were hired by IRS. Am I right?
Yeah. Yeah. He said the IRS.
And you just said that I'll check it out.
Yeah.
Instead of that, what I would suggest you to do is that tell them to give a reference. Where did they get that information? So that the ball is in their court.
Yeah.
Because they are so unreasonable, these people.
Yeah. I don't disagree.
So put the ball in their court instead of putting it in your court.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you for the debating suggestion. It's a good one. Andy and KTNF in Minneapolis, we have 15 seconds. Andy, quick comment about net neutrality.
Okay, 15 seconds. Ready?
Yeah.
The porn industry is going to have the fastest bandwidth you'll ever see.
Oh, yeah. That's where the money is on the Internet, and it's where 30 or 40% of the traffic is. I mean, until Netflix came along, it was more than half of all traffic was the porn industry. You're absolutely right, Andy. And it'll be interesting to see if the porn industry starts weighing in seriously on this. You'd think the small providers would be upset about it. But anyhow, tomorrow is Friday. It'll be anything goes. Senator Sanders will not be with us. He's traveling. So we're going to have a fine and fun day, just you and me. So, and don't forget, democracy actually does require you. Yeah, we're losing it, but we can get it back. Join up with somebody. PDAmerica.org, movetoamend.org. Get active. Tag your it. We'll see you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, go to TomHartman.com.
Hey friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com. America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com. Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com. Providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com, total protection. Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com, your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartman.com.